Hi, everyone. Welcome back to The Window. We're recapping June's international window, which featured action from across the globe. CONCACAF, UEFA, AFC, CAF, and the last three teams to qualify for the World Cup. Joe, how did you feel about the June international window?
I'm already having withdrawal.
Likewise.
It was so nice to have, and it felt like very extended. I mean, it was like 3 weeks, it felt like, of games, you know, which was a lot of fun. So yeah, missing it already. And, you know, there's not a whole lot of club action going on, even though a lot of the leagues that I like to follow are summer leagues and they are in season. It kind of has that little bit of an empty type feeling. So
it does, but it'll pick back up soon, but a lot to cover. Wanted to jump into the World Cup qualifiers. We have the final 32 now that are going to Qatar. There was a little bit of a protest that came through towards the end among teams that were not playing. Ecuador was almost knocked out or disqualified as a result of an inquiry by who else but Chile.
Of course.
I'm glad nothing came from that and Ecuador is actually still in it.
Yeah. And I think the chances of something happening there would have been pretty slim. Like if you look at the player's history, I mean, even if he wasn't a citizen of Ecuador, he's been living in Ecuador for way longer than what the requirement is to switch. Right. And I don't know. So that whole thing just kind of was silly.
it felt like they were grasping at straws there.
And, oh yeah, totally.
It's unfortunate that it's come to become a normal thing with Chile.
Yeah. Well, and it's not justified, I don't think, but you can kind of maybe see a little bit why, like who is coming in their pipeline, right? Like their golden generation is done. And honestly, I just don't see a whole lot of progress happening there.
Yeah.
You know, there's political turmoil in the country as well, you know, and that all, whether we like it or not, has some sort of effect on the game. And so Chile has a long, difficult road. And so, yeah, they were totally grasping at straws, trying to get maybe one more chance. Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So it didn't work. Ecuador's in, they're still in.
It's good.
And I still think they actually have a chance to get out of their group in Qatar, but, you know, more to come on our World Cup previews. I'm sure we'll talk about that group in Ecuador a lot more.
Well, yeah. And maybe we should mention too, Ecuador, this break, I mean, they played very well. They did not concede a single goal in the games that they had. They beat Nigeria.
Yeah.
My mind is drawing a blank on the other teams that they faced. But yeah, they had some pretty good friendlies they looked sharp. I mean, low scoring, that's kind of not too surprising. It's kind of what you get with Ecuador, but I do agree with you. I think they're going to be a surprise for a lot of people, and they definitely have a good shot getting out of that group. So
yeah, they're an exciting team, an up and coming team that I think a lot of people want to see. Mm-hmm. It's kind of that next CONMEBOL team. So looking forward to seeing them for sure.
Yep.
We had the other CONMEBOL team who was still vying for a World Cup spot in Peru. We knew they were going to be in the final. We didn't know who they were going to play going into this June window.
Correct.
And so first we had Australia against UAE. And that was a wild match. you know, it definitely did not have the timidness, I would say, of the other, you know, final matches. When that game opened up, you know, Australia knew a trading shots. I mean, I felt like it could go either way. Australia jumped ahead, UAE leveled almost immediately. And from then it was game on.
Yep. Yeah. And the second half was crazy. It was better than I think I anticipated it to be. Mm-hmm. So that was enthralling, very excited about that. And I think the team that should have gone through did go through in the end. But yeah, credit to UAE. I mean, they put up a fight until almost the very last minute. So good on them.
Yeah. That was definitely an exciting match. I agree. I think based on the way they played, Australia did deserve to advance. How do you feel the Australia versus Peru match aligned with how you felt the teams performed? And so, spoiler, you know, we're after the fact, but Australia qualified. An incredible penalty shootout with Mr. Redmayne in goal.
Legend. He's a legend now.
With some incredible antics in goal. What did you think of the Australia versus Peru match?
It was not what I think everybody was really expecting, but I think the result was probably deserved. Peru just, unfortunately, they just looked shell-shocked the whole game. You know, they really struggled, I felt, to get going offensively. You know, that Australia played a very solid game, I thought, both defensively and offensively. And if I'm being honest, I think Australia had the better chances. But I just remember coming away from that game, and I think I messaged you as well. Yeah. It's like, Australia, man, like, where's this team coming from? Right. Like this was more like the Australia that we saw at the beginning of qualifying versus what we saw, you know, towards the end. You know, I think that's a good thing to see. And I think that's needed overall by not just the team themselves, but also for the game in Australia, because let's be honest. I mean, this team doesn't really have like big names on it, like some of the Australia teams in the past. Right.
Yep.
And so, you know, for someone to come off the bench and be the hero and who plays his game domestically in Australia, for Sydney FC, you know, that's a big deal. And I'm thrilled for them. For Peru, I am disappointed. They just looked shell-shocked. I mean, the stadium I think was pro Peru. And so they had the backing of the support. Although I think that one was more of a 50-50 split than the New Zealand Costa Rica game, which we'll get to later. they just struggled from the from the first whistle and you know, I don't know how deep we want to go into this, but you know, Gareca is the coach for Peru, and I honestly think he did everything in his power to get that team through that game. I thought his substitutions were good and timely, and it all just came down, I think, to players on the pitch again, you know, credit to Australia, they shut Peru down in the wide spaces, and Lapadula he was just toothless on the night. You know, he just couldn't find anything. It was Australia that looked more dangerous throughout the game. What did you think?
Yeah, I think you made a lot of good points, and I didn't want to interrupt you. There were a number of different things I wanted to jump in on, but I think in our preview show, you kind of hit on some of the things that we were discussing, where Australia was really limping into the playoffs. And Peru had to fight to get back, to even get into that position to get there. And we didn't know which Australia team we were going to see. I think we both felt that they were the better team than UAE. I think we both expected them to win. But really, when it came to the matchup with Peru, I think we were questioning, would we see the team that we liked and thought was really good and strong at the beginning? Or would we see the team that was really limping towards the finish at the end? I think it was the former, and I think that's why they advanced. I think they really got it together. I think they probably benefited from playing a match before this. I think they got, you know, they coming off a big win, and they got some time to play together and not just a friendly and an elimination match. And I think they got a little momentum there. So I think Australia, I think they're going to be tough at the World Cup. I think, you know, they're going to be a tough team. Maybe not as tough as Peru may have been, but they're not a pushover by any means. And then for Peru, I agree. I think, you know, I admittedly did not see the entire match. From what I did see, it looked to me like they felt they were going to win the entire time. I never really got the impression that they look like, you know, we're not going to come out on top. I don't know, you know, it never seemed like they were really concerned about Australia, but they just didn't do anything to win the match.
Yep.
And that's, you can't just expect you're going to win and then win. And, you know, especially when you leave it, you know, to penalties at the end, it's a toss up at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think until, you know, they really, you know, went behind in penalties, that was probably the first time in the entire match they had any doubt, but they just, you know, lacked that killer instinct that they needed to knock Australia out in the elimination match.
Yep. Yeah. And it's, everybody's freaking out about, you know, the throwing the notes on the water bottle or whatever, right. From Redmayne. But to be honest, you know, should he have had the notes on the water bottle in the first place? I don't know, you know, so it's, I don't know. It's a dozen one way and half a dozen the other. Right. So, for Peru, you know, again, just looking at maybe the bigger picture and where are they going to be, you know, they're in a very similar situation, I think, to Chile, right? It's like they do have kind of a lot of older players, and they have a lot of players who are not necessarily playing on big teams, right? They don't have a lot of, I would say, quote unquote stars, right? Yeah. You know, and certainly not like a Brazil, Argentina, Uruguay.
Absolutely.
You know? And so, you know, are they used to beating the odds with that sort of squad? I would say yes, probably. Mm-hmm. I think most of their, you know, most of their teams in the past have been similar to what they're going to be coming up, you know, but it just makes me wonder about the bigger picture and the, you know, the talent coming out of Peru and how do they elevate that to a point that will help them, you know, get back. So this next cycle will be very fascinating to see what Chile, Peru can put together. Yeah. Venezuela as well, I would say, because, you know, they got their coach is Jose Pekerman. He used to coach Colombia.
Yeah.
Right. And I think we saw the start of something great with them at the end of qualifying in CONMEBOL. Yeah. So anyways, there's some questions that are going to need to be answered. You know, it's just going to be very interesting to see once we start this new cycle. Yeah. But that's way in the future. That's way in the future.
It is, but I think it is, you know, for Peru, I think it's disappointing, but I think you make a valid point that it might be a bit of time until we see them in that same position again.
Yeah. And you could see it on the players' faces when the final one was done, right? Is they just, you know, they were going to break down anyways, regardless. Yeah. But I think a lot of them knew, you know, this is it for me in a Peru shirt, right? Like, I'm done, you know?
Absolutely.
So yeah, they gave us all some really good memories, you know, playing Denmark, playing France, you know, you know, they should be very proud of what they've done over the last, you know, several years, right? Yeah. I think it's great. So congratulations, Australia Soccer Brews. I think I saw a stat that said that ever since the A-League has been formed, Australia has qualified for every World Cup.
Wow.
If I'm not mistaken, I'm pretty sure that's what it said. Okay. And I did not fact check it. So that's, I'm just trusting, but
I'm going to take your word for it. Go A-League.
That's pretty incredible. So good for them.
Cool. All right. Let's shift to the first match, which at this point feels like it was a long time ago, which it was a couple weeks ago at this point, but Wales, Ukraine.
Hey, so what, sorry, one more thought before you go there. So also, this means that Asia now has second most teams in the World Cup behind UEFA, which is interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. It is interesting that AFC has got more than CONMEBOL.
Yep.
Very interesting. Good stat. I like it. So I'm jumping ahead also, but you know, Ukraine versus Wales, Ukraine won a match prior to that, winning in Scotland to get to that final match. And mm-hmm. so, you know, we had to wait for this leg of the European playoffs. I think Ukraine had a lot of support, obviously, really around the world, you know, people rooting for them to make the World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
They played their hearts out. I thought they were phenomenal in both matches, against Scotland and Wales. I think they were the better team than Scotland. And even, you know, with Scotland playing at home, they really showed a lot. And I think they definitely deserve that win at Scotland.
Yeah, I agree. I was a little, again, Scotland seems shell-shocked.
Yeah.
You know, that's the word I keep coming back yeah. to, but I'm like, man, you're playing at home. You know, they just, I don't know. They just didn't really, I guess turn up would be the,
yeah.
you know, and that sounds harsh. I'm not trying to be harsh, but I expected more and they delivered less.
Yeah. Yeah. I think their fans would tell you the same. Everyone was very optimistic about Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
It was a tough draw. Ukraine is a good team.
Yep.
No matter how you slice it. So, Ukraine moved on, against a Wales team who was playing at home, hadn't qualified for the World Cup in 60 plus years. It was a big match for them. And I think they, unlike Scotland, rose to the occasion against Ukraine.
So I'm not sold on Wales. I'm not. Okay. And you know what? The fact that they're there now, maybe that's going to change things.
Yeah.
But I thought Ukraine played better and I thought Ukraine was probably more deserving to go through. And it's unfortunate that an own goal is what sends Wales through.
Yeah.
Basically, you know, and to come that far and then to go out on an own goal is just a brutal, brutal way, especially given political circumstances, given the way that you played on the field, you know.
Yeah.
And Wales is interesting. They'll be up for it for sure, but just what that means, I don't know. You know, I felt like they struggled in the game to really get firing. They rely very heavily on their superstars, Bale, you know, Ramsey, but I'm not sure that those guys are gonna deliver at the World Cup. And, you know, if they do, full credit to them, because that's why they're superstars. Right. Yeah. But, and those two will definitely be hard to shut down. There's a lot of other talent in the Wales team for sure. That's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying they're not a talented team. What is their identity? And right now I feel like their identity is Gareth Bale.
It is,
but I'm not sure that's what they want their identity to be.
I look at it, you know, from both lenses, and you make a good point. It's a tough break to lose on an own goal, but if Gareth Bale doesn't take that free kick in the manner that he does and put it in that position to even have that as an opportunity,
right,
that's not going in the net. So
right,
Bale always seems to rise to the occasion whenever they need a play. He didn't even score technically.
Yeah.
but he, you know, he was the one that put the ball in the area to even allow that to happen. And so, I mean, he is their guy and I'm happy for him to finally get there. You know, we've talked a lot about just different players that, you know, winding down in their careers and, you know, their last opportunities. And this may have been it for Gareth Bale and a number of other guys. And, you know, I'm definitely happy for them. Wayne Hennessy was a controversial choice in goal, and he played phenomenal.
He was good. Know,
without his performance, Wales doesn't keep a clean sheet. I don't even know if they win. And so he's another guy that's just been around for a long time, and you know, he finally made it as well. And so I think there are a lot of guys. So it's just, it's tough because no matter, you know, you're going to be happy for whoever wins, and you know, that the team that lost that, you know, they're, whether it's these guys from Wales that have been around for a long time or Ukraine, you know, it's somebody's got to lose, unfortunately.
Right. Yeah. No, yeah, that's very true. And that's a good point about Hennessy. Yeah. He definitely stepped up. That's for sure. So yeah, kudos to them. And look, I am excited to watch them. I think the game against the US is going to be a key game in that group. Yeah. So I'm excited for that from a personal perspective. Yeah. So yeah, it's going to be a big challenge, I think, for the US to mark out, you know, Bale and Ramsey, if, you know, if he's playing.
Yeah.
And yeah. And I'm pretty sure that Bale's looking for a new club this summer. Mm-hmm. So that'll be interesting to see where he lands, you know, cause he's going to want to go someplace where he's going to play. So anyway, yeah. Congratulations, Wales.
Indeed. All right. So the final playoff match was one that I think it might've been the one you were looking forward to most.
Definitely.
And I think you probably came out of it more frustrated than you thought would even be possible.
Dude,
talking about New Zealand and Costa Rica. What happened in that match?
That was okay. So out of all of them, I think that was probably, at least me for my money, that was probably the most exciting game mm-hmm. out of all of them. And the reason for that is because it was almost like reverse script of what everybody thought was going to happen, including myself.
Yeah. Likewise.
We all thought, or I don't want to speak for everybody, but I certainly thought that Costa Rica was just going to fly, mm-hmm. you know, just fly at New Zealand. And it was like the total opposite. Yeah. I'm still scratching my head at how New Zealand did not get out of that game.
Yeah.
I mean, from the chances that they had from some really just, I'm sorry, but atrocious VAR calls.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm just like, wow. So congratulations, Costa Rica. Good job. You struck early and you made it count. So congratulations. I did not like your tactics. You scored and then you packed it in and you allowed New Zealand to have possession. You allowed New Zealand to have their shots. You were looking to counterattack. I think it's a smart strategy. I, again, was not the biggest fan of it. I'm just kind of at a loss for words because, you know, yes, the team that we thought would go through went through, but honestly, I'm not sure I feel like it was deserved.
Yeah.
You know, and that's really harsh. That's really harsh on my end. And I don't mean to be that harsh, but that's just, after watching the game, that's where my heart is right now, I guess.
Yeah. I think the XG on that match was something like 1.6 for New Zealand to like 0.2 for Costa Rica or something like that. It was just a landslide in favor of New Zealand.
Yeah.
And, you know, as you said, Costa Rica struck early. And then I think I saw something that I think it's possible after Costa Rica scored their goal, their XG did not change for the rest of the game. And New Zealand's just went up and up and up and chance after chance and just couldn't break through.
Yeah. Which, again, playing both sides, right? So credit to Costa Rica for defending, you know, those opportunities. But then also on the other side, like New Zealand, oh man, like you have to put them away. You have to put them away, you know? And it's crazy. I felt like New Zealand's prep was good. I think the Peru friendly before this game for them was a good setup match to get them ready for this game. I thought that was solid. You know, I thought the coach, I liked their coach, New Zealand's coach. I thought he had them prepared very well. He was fuming after the game about the VAR calls. Right. Yep. You know, the Ticos, man, they did what they needed to do. They're there. I hope they don't play like that at the World Cup.
Yep. Would very much agree with that.
I would be extremely disappointed if they did. You know, and so, yeah, let's, you know, let's do something a little different. Let's get some of that magic that
absolutely
they seem to find against the US every time.
Yep.
Let's get that against some other nations now. You know, because, I guess that sums up my thoughts.
I mean, Costa Rica now has made 5 out of the last 6 World Cups. So
there you go.
They find a way to get it done. It has been easier to get there in the past, but, you know, this is the path they took. I think, you know, coming from all the way far back in the table, I think, you know, when we talked last fall, I think we kind of had them dead to rights and said, you know, there's no way they come back and even pass Panama. And, you know, the Inter-Confederation draw, I think, went in favor of CONCACAF. Nothing against, again.
No, you're New right. Zealand,
I think if you were choosing amongst New Zealand, Australia, and Peru, which team you most likely want to play, I think you'd say New Zealand.
Oh, yeah.
And so they got, you know, everything to kind of fall their way, and they are at the World Cup.
And for New Zealand, I think it starts to beg the question, like, okay, look, you're clearly top dog in Oceania, right?
Yep.
And how is that serving you? You know, when you get into these types of situations, you haven't really come up against a ton of quality opposition. You've tried to prepare the best of your ability with some friendly games, but, you know, is the discussion about joining, you know, AFC, is that?
I think it has to be. I mean, with the exception of, it's tough because now the field's expanding, right?
Right.
And so
they get an auto spot, right?
They're basically automatically into
the world. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I still feel like they should consider it. You know, they're not playing continental tournaments. Basically at this point, I can't recall the last time OFC held any sort of tournament.
Right.
And then, you know, your qualifying is just, they're just not getting a level of competitive matches that pretty much every other team that I would say has the quality of them gets throughout the world. I don't think there's a single other nation around the world that you look at and you think, okay, this team is as good as New Zealand is. And they don't play quality opposition on a regular basis.
Yeah. I agree. So it's going to be interesting to see if there's any sort of change at all, which again, with them having a basically an auto spot, you know, I would be surprised at this point in time, you know, but it does beg the question, you know, how are you going to prepare your players for a bigger stage? Right. And
agreed.
So, yeah.
All right. So that concludes the 32 team World Cup field. Any final thoughts that you wanted to add about the World Cup? I know, you know, we'll obviously have a lot more to talk about as the months approach, as we head to Qatar for November. Any final thoughts you wanted to add about the field of 32 for the World Cup?
Well, now that we know the all 32 teams, what group are you most excited for?
I'd have to say the US's group. Just, you know, from a personal perspective, I'm looking forward to playing Wales. I'm looking forward to playing England. I'm really intrigued by Group A. I think of all of them, you know, Qatar, Ecuador, Senegal, Netherlands. I'm really curious to see how that group goes. I think, like, I'd expect Netherlands to get through, but I don't know. Something about Senegal and Ecuador, I think there could be something there. So I think, you know, just kind of looking through all of them, that's probably the group that I would say I'm most interested in, because I think it's up there, if not the most up there, in terms of, you know, unpredictability, I'd say.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. I think A and F, F, G, and H, those are all groups that I'm very curious about.
Yeah.
Good shout.
Indeed. All right. We talked about a total of 5 matches. There were over 300 played in June. So I hope everyone is ready to listen for the next 15 hours as we go through each of them. we're not actually going to do that, but the UEFA Nations League is where we'll head next. And the UEFA Nations League again is a tournament. The leagues are four leagues. There are 16 teams in each of league A through C. And then League D has an additional 7 teams to round out the 55 for UEFA. What's interesting this time around is the connectivity between the UEFA Nations League and Euro 2024. In the last edition of Euro, UEFA had winners of each league, the winners of the groups in each league, mathematically guaranteed to at least go to playoffs as Euro qualifying. And then one team minimum from each league A through D automatically qualified for the finals. And so they're trying to make these matches worthwhile. One of the things that is different this time around, which as we go through, I think is probably not a welcome addition. I think it is not the right thing to do. They are using the results of the leagues to determine the pots for the Euro qualifying draw. So not only will teams have the opportunity to qualify through the playoffs from the Nations League, the Nations League is also being used to determine the pots for the draw. And given that each team is maximum playing 6 matches, it's an extremely small sample size to have that much weight, I think. And so just wanted to, you know, start with that, because there are a lot of implications as a result of these matches that, you know, these are replacing friendlies. It's supposed to be a better tournament. I think UEFA has overdone it in terms of the importance of the Nations League, but what did you think of the UEFA Nations League? How did you think, did you think teams approach this with, you know, their full squads, their, you know, taking it seriously, trying as hard as they possibly can in this Nations League?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think some do, and I think some don't.
Yeah.
So I'll give you an example out of this last window here. I think you could look at France, actually.
Yeah.
I think we saw a lot of rotation with that team during these games. And I think that's why they're currently bottom of their group, which is a very difficult group, but you know, they're only sitting on 2 points after 4 games.
Yeah.
So, you know, where does that rest in this discussion, right? Mm-hmm. Are they taking it seriously? Are they using this as an opportunity to look at other players ahead of, you know, maybe they know that, you know, come qualifiers, it's going to be a different story. And this is the opportunity that they need to use to look at different players and see who's coming through the, you know, through the pipeline and who's going to fit where and trying new things. Right. But then you have other teams that I think, well, and another example like that actually, who did it better I think you could say is Denmark, actually. Yeah. You know, Denmark, they actually did field, you know, even against the Croatia game, which is the game that they lost, that was a pretty heavily rotated side. Mm-hmm. from what they normally do, and that could have played a role in why they ended up dropping that game. But, you know, so I think you're seeing, you know, a mixed bag here, right? Like, and that can make it difficult to really get a read on how some of these nations are doing or how they're going to do. So it just makes it interesting, but I guess that would be my take on your question.
And I think in the prior version before Euro, doing well had positive upside. You could qualify for the playoffs. It was a second opportunity to get into Euro if you didn't qualify. So there was incentive to do well. The big difference was there was, you know, not necessarily a penalty if you didn't do well. And, you know, for teams that finished bottom of their group, maybe you got relegated, maybe UEFA makes the leagues larger so you don't get relegated. But that's really it, right? You're just in a different league for the next Nations League. This now has real implications because you look at a team like France and they have a 70% chance to be in pot two for the draw for Euro qualifying. That's ridiculous. Not only do they have a 70% chance, another team that I think took advantage of that, which we all are aware of, is Hungary. And Hungary's got a 95% chance, according to our numbers now, to be in pot one for the draw for Euro qualifying.
See, that's amazing.
And so there's just too much at stake. And you look at it, and it's six matches, four of which are played in like a 10-day span.
Yep.
That are determining the pots for your continental tournament. Like, how can you have that much at stake for these matches in such a short period of time? There's nothing else that's used to determine the pots other than the leagues. That's it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, UEFA, they must have, clearly they reevaluated after the last version, right? And so maybe this is their desire to make these more meaningful.
Yeah.
You know, that wouldn't surprise me too much.
Yeah.
And kind of going back to your last question, you know, I think we saw a lot of heavy rotation in the teams in Group A.
Yeah.
You know, but in the groups below the, or the leagues below them, right? So sorry, League A, but yeah. In like leagues B and C, you know, I think we saw a lot of like strong teams put forth,
right? Oh, yeah.
and less rotation. So that was a thought I had just now as well. But yeah, in terms of seeding and all that, I mean, you have a much better handle on that than I do, by being honest, you know. And so for me, it's just interesting to hear that this is, you know, a potential fallout coming from what's going on now.
Yeah. The League B teams, you can, I thought were very competitive. I will say, I like the Nations League. And I think we'll talk about this when we get to CONCACAF as well, because I feel like every match is competitive. And even in World Cup, Euro qualifying, continental qualifying, you're going to have those matches where you have the top teams against the bottom teams that are blowouts and, you know, you hear people coming out of the woodwork. Why do we need to see England playing against San Marino? Why do we need to see this and that? The Nations League kind of takes that away. And I feel like every match is competitive in the Nations League for the most part. Mm-hmm. There are very few exceptions. So I think from that aspect, like, it's great to get teams that are consistent playing against each other. And I think that was kind of what UEFA was thinking when they decided to use it for the pots. Is kind of like, oh, well, the teams are already broken up reasonably well in terms of their quality.
Yeah.
But you go look back and the restrictions and how they're divvying it up. So another, you know, way to look at that, look at League C. The way that UEFA has broken up the teams mathematically, not a single team from League C can be higher than pot four for the draw. And you look through League C and you see teams like Turkey and you see teams like Greece and you see, you know, others that are strong, Slovakia in there, and they've even struggled a little bit. But to mathematically say that no matter what, even heading into this, just because of the Nations League you're in, and like Turkey got relegated, right? They, it's not like they weren't up there. You can be no better than pot four. Mm-hmm. You have Hungary in pot one, you have Turkey in pot four, you have Greece in pot four. You're going to look at, you know, some other teams that aren't bad teams, but to have, you know, Croatia, Austria in pot one, France and England could be in pot two. It's just, it feels like it is going to be not the best draw. It feels like the teams are not distributed evenly. And so it's a little disappointing that UEFA decided to head that route, but I like the Nations League. I just think, I think, you know, to your point, how do you make it meaningful, but at the same time, you know, not put too much weight on it because I think they've gone too far.
Yeah.
But the matches were great. I really enjoyed the matches. Not to complain about the Nations League. It was great. There were a lot of surprises. Do you want to talk about England or do you want to save them for the end?
Yeah, let's save them for the end. Save them for the end. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just where they sit in the table, the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, I think, you know, as it stands right now and just, you know, going through, League A, as we project it, it seems like the finals, which are not settled yet, we favor Denmark pretty heavily in group one. Spain and Portugal are pretty close in group two, but we favor Spain. Germany, I think, is the favorite, but still wide open in group three. And then the Netherlands really, you know, should look like they should win group four. So our projections for the final four, Denmark, Spain, Germany, and the Netherlands at this point.
That's a pretty good group right there.
I think no matter who you know, who ended up making it through the finals of the UEFA Nations League should always be pretty good.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Any other team that stuck out to you in League A that you wanted to highlight at all?
we'll save. Yeah, there are definitely teams, and I think we'll get to them a little bit later. You and I both,
right.
Because yeah, there's some chat we got to have about some of these teams.
Indeed. All right. Well, then let me you know, quickly shift to a couple other leagues. I know we're going to talk about some of those teams in more in depth later, and just give a quick roundup for our picks to get promoted / you know, win their group. So. League B, we're currently favoring Ukraine, Israel, Bosnia, and Norway, which is a little surprise, I think, that for us, Bosnia, you know, ahead of Montenegro and Finland. It's a little bit of a surprise, but, you know, they've done really well. League C looks done for the most part. There's really not a lot at stake at this point. Turkey and Greece are going to win their groups and get promoted. Kazakhstan, again, another team we'll probably talk about in a little bit. We favor them to get promoted, and Georgia out of the fourth group. So it looks like those four are pretty set. And then in League D, we like Latvia and Estonia to get promoted as well.
Nice.
All right. Anything else on the Nations League that you wanted to touch upon?
Not UEFA. Okay. Should we shift to CONCACAF?
We should. So talk us through the CONCACAF Nations League.
yeah. So it's structured a little bit differently, right? You know, in elite, so there's only three leagues, whereas UEFA, I think, has four. That's
yeah.
And then League A only has three teams in each group, whereas Leagues B and C each have almost all of them have four, I guess. So League B all have four. League C, Group A has four teams and the rest have three. Mm-hmm. So yeah, We've had a couple teams that have now qualified for the Gold Cup. I'm sure you can run through those. I know El Salvador is one of them. I think Jamaica is also another one.
Yep, Panama is the third.
Panama, there we go. So yeah, you know, props to those nations. I guess the only other thought that I have at this moment in time would be, you know, just the United States game against El Salvador. Just a quick note on that one, because that game was wild. And this is what I do love about Nations League. And like you said earlier, you know, we're both big fans of these competitions. You know, we just think they could be structured a little bit differently and make it better. But one of the things that we love is, especially with the CONCACAF Nations League, is just, you know, some of the scenery that you get, but also, so, you know, with the locations, you get some interesting elements, you know, with tropical storms moving through, with, you know, derechos and, you know, all sorts of things. And there was definitely one in this game with the U.S. versus El Salvador. I mean, I think in almost every other part of the world, that game probably would not have been played.
it was amazing that they played that. Yeah, I was excited for the scenery around the stadium. I didn't expect the scenery in the stadium to be as exciting as it was.
Right. Yeah. So for those of you who didn't get to catch it, it was dumping rain for hours before the game, all through the game. The field was just like soaking wet. You know, you just step somewhere and it just instantly becomes mud. And I felt bad for the U.S. guys. They're playing in white. Yeah. They looked like a bunch of mud men by the end, you know, something out of your worst nightmare. And yeah, the elements definitely played a part in that game. I think the U.S. barely scraped a draw with a very, very late goal. Brandon and I were both, I think, on edge, just like, holy crap, what's going on here? Are we going to drop this game? You know? And so, yes. It was interesting. What did you think about it?
I likewise could not believe they actually played the match. but I think they, it was a wild scene. And just, you know, seeing Yunus Musa that got fouled when El Salvador got their red card after the U.S. got a red card for some reason. And
we still don't know.
Musa came up, he was just eating mud.
Yeah,
it was just an incredible scene. And it's, I think, you know, a lot of people on Twitter, you're just reading things, and you know, the only thing that anybody wanted to get out of that match was nobody getting hurt.
Yeah,
and that's unfortunate, because that's it, just, you know, just play it on a safer pitch or something. Like, you shouldn't be going into a match with, you know, we don't even care what happens with the result, just don't get injured.
Yeah.
That's definitely unfortunate.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, League A, I think I've been disappointed with League A. I've been pretty vocal on Twitter. And I think not everyone agrees with me, which is fine. But I think League A is actually too small. It's 12 teams. I think a lot of the commentary was, why add more teams that arguably are worse because they're currently in League B? And my counterpoint to that is, I don't really think it matters how many teams are in League A. You're probably going to end up with the same handful of teams making the finals anyway. Which is unfortunate, but it's just how it is in CONCACAF, with Canada, the United States, and Mexico clearly being the top three. And so for me, I think giving more teams the opportunity to play against the best competition can help them. That's my personal view, but I don't know. I you know, you look at all four groups, and coming into it, you know, I was pretty confident who would be last in each group. And it's been bad. I mean, Suriname, Martinique, Curaçao, Grenada, they had no chance. I mean, and I shouldn't say Curaçao is not officially done yet, but, and I mean, neither is Martinique, but, you know, they're just going right down to League B, and as people expected. I think it would add a little more competitiveness having other teams, because I just feel like they're going down. They're probably good enough to get back up to League A, but whoever's moving up from League B to League A, the 8 teams that are there, you know, they're just going to be going back and forth, up, down, up, down, up, down. And I don't think that's the best approach. And so I hope CONCACAF adds more teams to League A. It's a tough spot because of the way that CONCACAF is structured from a quality perspective at the top versus the middle. Whereas UEFA's got a lot of strong teams, CONCACAF doesn't have that.
Right.
And so it's a tough call, but I've been disappointed with League A, and I would like to see them add more teams, but I don't know. How do you feel about that?
Yeah. Well, yeah, we kind of talked about this a little bit last time, you know, and I think now that I've seen it, seen it kind of play out a little bit, you know, I'm looking at the groups right now I think I would tend to agree with your assessment there. Because I don't think a team like Curaçao, who is actually, in my opinion, on the ups,
yeah,
should be, you know, down in League B. I think that they would rather have these games against the Canadas, against the Honduras, you know, which are in their group currently, you know, against Mexico, El Salvador, et cetera, right? And if I'm being honest, you know, Curaçao has been, in my opinion, a fun team to watch, even though their performances or I guess their results, haven't quite been there. But, you know, I've enjoyed having them in League A and seeing them go up against Canada and Honduras, you know, some of the, you know, traditional, well, Honduras for sure, a bigger gun in Canada right now, you know, and hopefully to stay, you know, a big gun as well. And that's been exciting. So, Yeah.
So I think at this point, you know, we mentioned El Salvador, Panama, Jamaica have qualified for the Gold Cup. The other teams that finish in the top two in each group are going to qualify directly. Looks like it's going to be Mexico, Costa Rica, Honduras, Canada, and the U.S. I don't think anybody's going to be surprised to see any of those teams the Gold Cup.
Right.
But League B, I think, you know, is where I think there's a bit more drama. And there you do have 16 teams. And I think the competition's been great. For me, League B has been by far my favorite of the three. I think the games have been the most competitive. You know, teams are moving up and down. Our projections are changing. I mean, it's unpredictable. And I think that's what you're looking for out of the Nations League, is having teams that are of similar quality playing against each other in competitive, meaningful matches. And I think League B has been great personally.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. And yeah, again, a lot of games, try to catch as many as possible. Yeah. I think you and I are going to talk about some teams in League B that kind of stood out to us. You can talk about it now if you
are
want.
Are you telling me you didn't watch all 30 games in League B?
No, I'm sorry. I caught a fair amount though. I caught a fair amount, although I don't think I watched Cuba a single time.
Yes.
And they're leading Group A right now. They're tied on 9 points with Guadeloupe. I did watch Haiti.
Yeah.
Not too surprising that they're at the top. Nicaragua is a very interesting prospect.
Yeah.
Especially since, you know, they're leading that group over Trinidad. And I think we might talk about that a little bit later. And then in Group D, French Guiana over Guatemala and the Dominican Republic both is very surprising to me.
Agreed. I think in, you know, there have been surprises. I agree. I think Haiti was probably the one team that maybe Guatemala also, I would say, we felt would be, you know, really at the top of their group and might not have as much difficulty as some other teams. Haiti's look good. They should win that group and qualify for the Gold Cup. Guatemala's been a bit disappointing for me.
Yeah. And
if you asked me who would be ahead of them, if you told me they were not in first, I would have probably guessed Dominican Republic and not French Guiana.
Right.
So it's a team you don't see that often because they're not a FIFA nation. And so you have these other teams like Martinique and Guadeloupe and, you know, a couple that you don't see as frequently, and this is it for them. And, you know, they probably have to look, just, you know, they don't get a lot of games. So maybe people didn't know as much about them and they should have. But yeah, they've been, they've looked really good.
Yes, they've been fun to watch. And yeah, it'll be, you know, I think everybody has two games left, I'm pretty sure, in
League
B, or close to that anyways. So yeah, I mean, there's definitely opportunity there. I mean, Guadeloupe, they're tied on points with Cuba. So definitely.
Yeah. And I think in Group A, and even Antigua's not out of it yet. They, for a while, you know, they beat Barbados first and then they beat Guadeloupe and they came out of the gate with 6 points.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually, you know, moved them to the top of our projections to win the group. And they stumbled a bit against Cuba, they're losing two matches. So interesting group there. I like Cuba. I think Cuba's ultimately going to emerge from that. But we will see. It's League B has been competitive. Like I said, you know, we've had teams moving up and down in terms of who we projected to win. So I think it's been really great competition.
Yeah. What about League C? Any thoughts there?
League C. And again, I mean, this is kind of why we were, you know, pushing a little bit to say, let's, you know, bump League A to 16, leave League B at 16. You know, heading into this League C, we had overwhelming favorites in every single group. And that's according to our numbers. But we had Bonaire, St. Kitts, St. Lucia, and Puerto Rico as overwhelming favorites. Bonaire is basically, you know, promoted at this point.
Mm-hmm.
St. Lucia and Puerto Rico have been officially promoted and going to the Gold Cup playoffs. St. Kitts and Nevis has struggled a little bit, but they should be fine. This is the problem I see with League C, is that I think the teams at the bottom of CONCACAF, kind of like the teams at the bottom of UEFA, tend to be pretty far behind some of the teams in front of them.
Sure.
And I think that, you know, you look at a team like St. Lucia and St. Kitts and Puerto Rico, and they're just better than the other teams in League C. I mean, there's no real way to sugarcoat that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think if you cut down the number of teams in League C, it makes it harder to get relegated from League B. And then League C, I think you tend to have more level competition. And so for me, League C has been disappointing because I kind of knew what was going to happen. and it's played out exactly that way. And it's great. I mean, look, you know, Bonaire is going to be in the Gold Cup playoffs. I mean, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And then for St. Kitts and Nevis and St. Lucia and Puerto Rico, same for them. They're going to be headed to the Gold Cup playoffs. And that's what you get winning a group in League C. So, I mean, from their perspective, it's probably gave them a better chance to qualify for the Gold Cup than staying in League B. But the competition has not been, I think, what the intent of the Nations League is about. And that's why I think I've liked League B so much. It feels like the structure needs to be modified a bit, but overall it's a good idea.
There you go. Golf clap for all those teams, right?
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, at this point, right. And I think we kind of talked a little bit about it, but just in terms of what happens next. So the top two teams from each group in League A qualify directly for the Gold Cup. The winners of the four groups in League B also qualify directly for the Gold Cup. So out of the 16 teams, you will know 12 of them just from the group winners. And then there's two rounds of qualifying. There's going to be basically head-to-head matches to figure out the last four teams. So the second place teams from League B will play against the winners from League C. And then the winners of those ties will play against the relegated teams from League A, for the last, which looks like it's going to be Suriname, Martinique, Curaçao, and Grenada. We'll play head to head against whoever wins preceding that, for the last four spots, the Gold Cup.
There you go. And that will fill it out.
Nice. So it's, see, the in CONCACAF, right? Like, there, it's, it, I like that it doubles as Gold Cup qualification, but there's no downside like there is in UEFA that I think, you know, we were talking about with the pots. CONCACAF, it's only good. If you do well, you know, progress. If you don't, at worst, you get relegated. There's nothing, you know, nothing else really there.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice.
So, but we'll talk about a few more of those teams just in specific, specific terms a little bit here. All right. Anything else you wanted to add on the Nations League?
No, I think we're good.
All right, cool. So we're going to shift to the last two confederations that played, you know, qualifiers in this window. And then we're going to wrap it up with some teams that we liked and some teams that we didn't like. I think Joe was calling it hot or not. Yep. But we will circle back. So we just wanted to go through quickly the African Cup of Nations qualifying. So two of six matches were played for AFCON qualifying in this window. The tournament's going to be held in the Ivory Coast in 2023. And the structure is identical to how it was the last time out. 12 groups of four teams. The top two teams from each group will qualify for the finals to make the field of 24. And so, you know, through two matches here, I watched a little bit of AFCON. Did you catch much of the AFCON qualifying?
I caught it a little late, but yeah. Yes, I did catch some. I saw Morocco play South Africa, caught Nigeria, although I didn't see their, was it 10-0
over Sao Tome.
Yeah. I didn't tune into that one. I tuned into the game before that. Who else did I catch? Ghana, maybe it was Ghana. Anyways, yes, I was yeah, able to catch a little bit. Yeah.
And I think, you know, that Nigerian match is kind of what I was alluding to previously, when you have, you know, qualifying where the stronger teams are playing at some of the weaker teams, Nigeria and Sao Tome ending up in 10-0. You're probably not going to see that in Nations League Group B or League A or anything. But
wouldn't it be so interesting if FIFA put something together, or maybe the confederations, where, you know, you had your Sao Tome and they're playing, you know, your Turks and Caicos, right? And your I don't know, Bahrain, or yeah, you know, whoever, right? Kind of these, I guess I'm gonna quote unquote call them minnows, right? Mm-hmm. I just wonder if those, what was that?
Bahrain's a good team.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yes, that was a bad example, but yeah, the point I think is valid. Like,
I agree.
Like, if all these minnows got together and played some sort of tournament, I just wonder if they would find it beneficial, or if, yeah, you know, they would just prefer to stay in their own confederation. I don't know. It's an interesting thought. It's an interesting thought.
The travel's tough.
That's the travel's tough. That's the thing.
Just play everything in Qatar.
Yeah.
Just like everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
Just move all the teams to Qatar for a month and just play a massive 200 team tournament.
Well, so I guess heading back to Africa though, right? It's like, there's not, you know, there weren't too many surprises, mm-hmm, I guess. You know, I actually thought we might have a surprise. South Africa took the lead against Morocco, but then they lost it in the second half. So yeah, I think, you know, all the groups, excuse me, everybody that you thought would come out of that group is looking pretty good, except for...
Are you referring to the Democratic Republic of the Congo?
I am. So it's very interesting because and I, we're going to talk about them. Maybe I'll just hold off, but there are two teams in particular. They're one of them that, you know, sacked their coach. It's just interesting. You know, I think he was only in charge for these two games.
Yeah.
And they've already dumped him. So
yeah, they're not a good team.
It's Brandon's a straight shooter.
We have them ranked 23rd in Africa. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they were a pot one team. And so maybe, you know, we have Gabon ranked ahead of them. We have Mauritania ranked a little bit behind them, and Sudan not far behind. We track, you know, over the last 3 years as what make our rankings. Mm-hmm. And Congo DR has played 28 matches over the last 3 years, and they've won 6 of them. So, you know, they've really struggled, and I think they've benefited a lot from getting really favorable draws. You look at their World Cup qualifying group, even this group is not that strong. You know, we like Gabon as the best team in that group, but it's like, if you can't finish top two in a group with Gabon, Mauritania, and Sudan, I mean, that's a problem.
Yeah.
And they didn't even pick up a single point in this window from two matches. They're not done yet, but we project them last in that group. We give them like a 20% chance to even qualify for AFCON at this point. So they're in bad shape. And you know, they're, you know, very, very disappointing team for me. But looking at the numbers, I don't think it's that surprising to see them struggling.
Right.
Who was the other team that you were thinking of as well?
Yeah, so Egypt actually.
Yeah.
Egypt ditched their coach as well after this international break. So they'll be looking for somebody new. They took a loss to Ethiopia. Ethiopia is a nation I think that is up and coming. I think you and I talked about this during AFCON, or maybe it was during the qualifiers. Mm-hmm. But anyways, you know, Ethiopia played very, very well. Egypt was nowhere to be seen or found. If you look at some of the media in Egypt, it's not necessarily a very pretty picture.
So. I can only imagine.
Yeah.
That being said, it is one match, and you only need to finish in the top two.
Yeah.
I am not nearly as concerned about Egypt. We still give them almost a 95% chance to qualify. So I'm not pulling the alarm and you know, pressing the panic button yet.
Not like the FA is, right?
No. I mean, one loss and firing a coach. I mean, okay.
Yeah.
You know, job security, clearly not very strong there.
Right.
But I think Egypt will be fine. It wasn't at home. You know, they won their other match. Yes, they're, you know, quote unquote bottom of the table, but you know, nobody has more points than they do either. So I think they will be okay. So, all right. Anybody else that really stood out to you here? And again, I don't want to, you know, jump ahead to our kind of favorite teams from the window, but is there anybody that you thought, you know, just really looked strong, you know, did what you expected them to do?
Well, outside of Ethiopia, who I just wanted to give kind of an honorable mention to, because mm-hmm. I thought they performed well this window. Yeah. So kudos to them. Yeah, I would say Mali was
the team I was thinking of as well.
Was very impressive this window. And actually, now that I think about it, that was one of the other games that I caught.
Yeah.
Very, very happy with how they performed. And I go back to their, you know, their playoff against their World Cup playoff against Tunisia. And I just shake my head because it's such a classic Tunisia move, you know, to, to get to the World Cup. And this Mali team is very exciting.
Yeah.
Filled with very talented players. They play really good football. And I would have, you know, again, nothing against Tunisia, but I would much prefer to have Mali there than Tunisia.
Yeah.
And you know, this their games this window just reinforced that for me, you know?
Yeah, this was the first time that I feel like they've lived up to the potential that they have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've talked about them a lot, and we both feel they're a very good team.
Yeah.
And it's always kind of been on the precipice of, okay, we know they can do more. We know they can do more. And I feel like this was the first window that they really showed that. You know, they trounced Congo 4-0. They beat South Sudan 3-1.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they look good. And hopefully this is kind of that bolt to get them there. But, you know, I would agree. I think Mali's a team that you know, they're getting to the point where people need to start thinking of them alongside some of the top teams in CAF.
Yeah, agree. And I'm pretty sure, so it was the South Sudan Mali game that I caught, and I'm pretty sure that Mali ended that game with nine guys, if I'm not mistaken, and they still managed to score two goals in the final, maybe 10 minutes, I think. I might be getting my games mixed up. Like I said, I watched a lot, but they're definitely exciting, and I'm thrilled for them. So
yeah, absolutely.
Looking forward to more of that.
All right. And one final note, just in elsewhere in CAF. So Kenya and Zimbabwe are out. So there are two groups with three teams in them. And so Group C, Cameroon is the clear favorite there, but Burundi and Namibia are the other two teams. So one of those two teams, Burundi or Namibia, will be at AFCON. So think a team you typically don't see at the finals, you will definitely see mathematically at the finals in 2023.
Are any of those going to be debuts, I wonder?
I didn't prepare that.
That's no worries. We'll figure it out next show. We'll put it on. But that's interesting. Good. That's an interesting little fact.
Yeah. So Burundi. Let me just look this up while we're here. Oh, Burundi was there in 2019. I thought I had recalled them being there.
Okay.
So they were there in 2019. Okay. That's the only time they've been there. So they've only been to the finals once.
Okay.
And Namibia, was it something similar? No, Namibia's been there a few times, actually. They were also there in 2019. They've been there three times.
Cool.
So,
okay.
But still, you know, not there that frequently.
Yeah, sure.
And you know, it would be interesting to see some fresh teams there as well.
Okay.
All right. Anything else on Africa before we shift to Asia?
No, nothing on Africa. Let's move on.
Okay. The big matches in Asia this window. Finally, the conclusion of the 2023 Asian Cup qualifiers. The World Cup qualification doubled as Asian Cup qualification, and COVID obviously happened and, you know, continued to delay that. But the qualifying started back in June of 2019. So it has been a 3-year qualification process. And we finally have the teams that will be at the 2023 Asian Cup. And it was exciting for me. This round I thought was, again, you had a lot of the stronger teams that had already qualified. I thought this was an extremely competitive round. And I think we had a lot of fresh faces that we may not have expected reaching the Asian Cup.
Such as?
Such as first timers, Tajikistan. I was confident in them. They delivered. But I think the other big one that we wanted to talk about is Hong Kong. They qualified for the Asian Cup for the first time since 1968. Mm-hmm. So
it's been a long time.
Not as long as Wales for the World Cup, but over 50 years since Hong Kong has been at the Asian Cup, and I'm excited to see them.
Yeah, so you can actually go on YouTube right now and catch replays of their games from this qualifying. They had India in their group, and they also had, I forget who else they had, but India came away with the group, and Hong Kong came in as runners up, but that still allowed them to qualify. And they're an interesting watch. I'm in the process of watching one of those games, so I don't have too much to add to the conversation, I guess, on Hong Kong, but they do excite me, and I'm very curious about them. A lot of these Asian teams, actually, I know very little about, and so I'm trying to expand my knowledge base. So, very, very excited for Hong Kong, and I think they'll be a good addition to the tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. They beat Afghanistan. They beat Cambodia.
Cambodia, that was it.
It was tough because the second place finishers, just the way that the math worked with Qatar qualifying, or not qualifying, well, I guess qualifying for the Asian Cup, but being the host at the World Cup, it meant that of the 24 teams, it actually was an odd number of teams that had already qualified. So instead of having 12 teams that already qualified, there were 13, which meant that even as a second place finisher in this round, you were not guaranteed to qualify. So Hong Kong was that basically last team into the field. They finished with 6 points. All the teams that finished with 6 points ended up qualifying, but only the Philippines finished below them, finished in second place, and did not reach the final. So the last 11 teams just in total, to round out the field, Jordan and Indonesia, Palestine, Uzbekistan, Thailand, India, Hong Kong, Bahrain, Malaysia, Tajikistan, and Kyrgyzstan. So those were the 11 teams to round out the field of 24 at the 2023 Asian Cup.
Up the stands.
Exactly. I was, you know, texting you all throughout the Asian Cup qualification, because I made an extremely bold prediction. I think I went too far, but I said the stands would go 5 for 5. Tajikistan made it, Kyrgyzstan made it, and Uzbekistan made it. But Afghanistan and Turkmenistan finished third in the group and disappointed me. So the stands went 3 for 5. But Tajikistan, for the first time ever, they were not the host, and they finished top of their group. So congratulations to Tajikistan. Like you, I admittedly do not know a substantial amount about that national team. But they do pretty well in our rankings, so I think they're decent and will have a good showing at the Asian Cup.
Cool. That's exciting. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. That tournament also, usually is in January, with the World Cup being moved to November, December. Asia's moved that tournament, back roughly 5 months or so. So the tournaments aren't back to back. So there will be a bit of a gap. And then, the Asian Cup will kick off about a year from now.
Wow. So if I'm correct, it seems like everybody's going to have some sort of competition next summer.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Asian Cup, AFCON, Gold Cup, Copa America, Euros, and off year. So it's the Nations League final.
It's the Nations League final
next year.
Yeah, that's right.
But I think so it probably won't be a final. I think they're probably going to kick off Euro qualifying. So I think you'll probably have 2024 Euro qualifying next summer.
All right, that's awesome. I did just want to shout out quickly to Indonesia, because I think it's great that they've qualified, and I don't know how many of you will be familiar with Johnny Duerden, but he's kind of a Asian football expert. Well, not kind of, he is. And and one of the comments that he's made recently on a podcast that he does is that Indonesia is kind of a sleeping giant, more or less, right? They're a really soccer mad nation of 300 million people that should probably be performing a lot better than they do. So they'll be a team that I kind of keep my eyes on for this, kind of going into this, because I'll be curious to see, you know, if, you know, just how they are. Really?
Yeah. They haven't made it, you know, just speaking of teams that have not been there, you know, previously, or it's been a long time after Hong Kong, Tajikistan, Indonesia and Malaysia both have not been there since they hosted joint hosted in 2007. So they're the third and fourth longest gap between Asian Cups. So we'll see. I don't want to throw too much water, cold water on that. We, our rankings don't currently have them that high, but we'll see.
Yeah, sure.
I think you look at a lot of these teams in Asia, I think, you know, it's really interesting to see how things change. And I think from my perspective with Asia, I think Asia is a bit unique because of just the gap in timing of qualification, right? So you had these couple rounds, you had the second round of Asian Cup qualification, that basically couples like the second round of World Cup qualification. But it's been a while since those matches were played. Like that huge group stage, like that started in the fall of 2019. And yeah, they kind of wrapped it up quickly last summer, you know, playing a few matches. Most of it was done though, or at least, you know, more than half of it was done at that point. And so I think by the time you get to the Asian Cup next summer, you know, you're roughly 4 years removed from the qualifying. And so I think that's a lot of time for things to change. And yeah. So a lot of these teams that were at the forefront of Asian qualifying, you know, still are going to be favored. Your Australia's, Japan, Saudi Arabia, you know, South Korea. But I think a lot of these other teams definitely have an opportunity to show that, you know, they've closed that gap over the last few years. And, you know, I'm definitely excited to see how they perform.
Yeah. Agreed. All right. I think that's good for Asia.
All right. So, that is our, you know, continental whip around, so to speak. I think, you know, to wrap things up, we wanted to highlight a few teams that, you know, each of us, Joe and myself, liked and disliked, throughout, you know, this past window. So I'm going to turn it over to you, and why don't you kick it off and, give us your five teams that impressed you the most in this qualifying window.
All right, cool. I will try to make this quick since I know we're running a little bit long, but, yeah, so the first team that I have, so we went with five and then I've got some honorable mentions, but, first team that I have is Greece. I think they are a team renewed under Gus Poyet. He has turned that team around and they have just wiped the board with their group. They performed very well. Did not even did not concede a goal at all, which that shouldn't be a shock to anybody who knows Greece.
Yep.
But you know, on the flip side, they finally found a way to score some goals. You know, so only seven, but seven out of four games. I think that's, you know, I think that's a fair return. Yeah. And they're looking, you know, I mean, they're looking solid. So I was very, very impressed with them, very impressed with what Poyet's got going on there. And, you know, some of the vibes coming out of the Greece camp are just really positive. And under the last couple managers that they've had, it just hasn't been that way. Mm-hmm. You know, there's been a real negative air. There's been a lot of criticism towards not only the FA, but the league in Greece as well, the Super League. And yeah, I mean, does this brush that under the rug a little bit? Maybe, but regardless, I think it's great for Greece. They had a lot of support this window during their games. They played their games at some new locations, not your traditional Athens, not your traditional Thessaloniki. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a great change for them as well. I think that the players enjoyed that. So yeah, really, really impressed with Greece. I think that's a team that we need to keep our eyes on now. I think that they're starting to make some moves. And I think we definitely could see them qualify for the Euros. So it'll be very interesting to see them going forward.
For Greece, I mean, just a quick note, I echo everything you just said. They're up to number 22 in our rankings in the world. Which I was even a little surprised to see that they were that high, but they've just been playing really, really well.
Yep.
And again, just coming back to that conversation about, you know, the Nations League and the pots, like, yes, they're in League C. That doesn't, you know, mean they're necessarily a bad team. And, you know, they're going to be in pot four for the draw for Euro. So I don't think anybody wants to draw Greece at all. They're playing really well.
Yep. Agreed. I think that's going to be a difficult draw for whoever gets them, just the way that they've kind of turned things around. But yeah, good shout. Second team for me is also from Europe, going with the Netherlands.
Yeah.
Really impressed with how they're playing right now. I think they look really sharp, and I think that they will have a huge amount of say in the World Cup this year.
Agreed.
I'm really enjoying just watching them. And, you know, I think Van Gaal has them doing some really good stuff right now. I think they're confident. They have a striker in Memphis Depay who likes to be in the spotlight, and he likes to shoulder that burden of being the main man, right? And he thrives in that sort of environment, whereas you don't necessarily see that so much at Barcelona because he's not necessarily the main man there.
Yeah.
And so when he plays for the Netherlands, he's just a different animal. And and they're deep. You know, they're very talented team. So yeah, Netherlands is number two for me, and I would not be surprised at all to see them go very, very far in the World Cup.
Agreed. Their matches always seem to be really, really enjoyable. Over their last, just taking a look at some numbers here, over the last 26 matches, they've scored 69 goals and only been shut out in one of those matches. So if you like goals, they're your team. Very exciting.
Yep.
Definitely one of my favorite teams to watch right now.
Yes. Good shout. Team number three, we've already kind of talked about them. That was Hong Kong. Again, just really, I think it's cool that they qualified. And it's, you know, it's the first time that they managed to do that for a very long time. And yeah, still kind of learning about their players, learning, you know, about the team. But I'm excited for them. I was impressed, that they were able to qualify, and I would love to see them draw China in the cup. Cool. For me, number four, we're going back to Europe. Another team that is really flying high right now is Norway. Just super impressed. You know, you take a look at this, they're probably in one of the toughest groups in League B for sure. With Serbia, Sweden, and Slovenia. None of those nations are really pushovers. Not even Slovenia. Slovenia has a crop of young talent that's starting to emerge. And I think we'll see some good things with them in the future. But, you know, Sweden is traditionally a team that has performed at a high level. Serbia as well. Serbia is a World Cup team. And for Norway to be leading that group, I'm excited for them and where they're going. And I was telling Brandon, you know, I told you earlier, had they had Holland in that international window, I think things would have been different.
I was thinking that same thing.
I think they might be looking at a World Cup right now. And so, you know, a very exciting team. You know, Solbakken's got them performing well. And Haaland, of course, you know, world class, and he's leading the line for them. He scored, I don't even know how many goals he scored this yeah. window, but it was two or more for sure. And yeah, it's just exciting. They're just exciting.
It is. I think for Norway, for me, you know, for a while they had not really done anything at the continental level. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it just, you're kind of naturally thinking, I mean, you know, with the exclusion of Holland, like, oh, you know, Iceland came out of nowhere. They were good for a while. They've since faded a little bit. I don't feel like Norway's in that same boat. Like, they're legitimately a good team.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're in the top 15 of our rankings in the world, and they've got a world-class player. And, you know, I think they're going to be really tough and really, you know, I think they're probably in that second tier. I don't think they're necessarily the top tier of the European teams, but they're a team that could easily, like you said, you know, they could have been at the World Cup. I think they're a team that when, you know, you look at Euro, they're going to qualify. And I think they probably make the knockout rounds in Euro. I think they're that good.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. I'm looking forward to that for sure. Team number five for me, in Africa, we already talked about them. That's Mali. So yeah, just very excited for that country and for that team. I think there's a lot of talented players. We've talked about that before. So they had a good window and so they were team number five, but some honorable mentions, again, already talked about them. Ecuador, didn't concede a goal this window. Very interesting that Ecuador, Argentina, and Uruguay each did not concede any goals this window. Brazil was the only team out of those four to concede a goal. And that was, they were playing a bunch of friendlies over in Asia. So interesting stat there, I guess. So yeah, Ecuador, Uruguay. So Uruguay, they smashed Mexico in a friendly 3-0. They drew with the US 0-0. Then they went on, I think, to beat Panama. They absolutely crushed Panama. So some decent games underneath their belt against CONCACAF opposition. And yeah, they look good. I'm excited to see what they can do in Qatar. I think they're going to make some noise.
Agreed.
So I think they're kind of fine tuning now. I do think that their new coach has kind of got his structure of the team set, and he's just kind of fine tuning that right now and trying to figure out, you know, who he can rely on and et cetera. So they were one. Ethiopia, we already talked about them. Hungary, we mentioned them in brief, but yeah, they're an honorable mention for me. I don't know if they're on your list, so I won't go too much into them. Okay. Well, I'll leave that to you. And then also, Nicaragua as well. And I think they might be on your list too. So I will hand you the torch.
That is all right. So yeah, Hungary is actually at the top of the list for me. I think you look at what they did and you know, coming into the Nations League, you look at them and they're in a group with Germany, England, and Italy, and it's kind of like, will they score a goal? Will they get a point? You know, will they put up any fight on the way to relegation? And through four of six matches, they top the group.
It's incredible.
And it's they're not even tied with anybody. They have the most points in the group. And yeah, I did not see that coming. I think one of the things for me, just kind of thinking back at Euro from last summer, with all the different host nations, you know, the Hungary matches stuck out to me as just a tremendous environment, a really, really difficult place to play for road teams. And so they beat England 1-0 in the first match. It's kind of like, I didn't expect that, but it's 1-0 and they were at home and I could see how that could happen. And so that was, you know, I would say a little unexpected, but wasn't a huge shock. They lost to Italy and it's like, okay, you know, that's how it, you know, should be and what we would expect. And then they came out and drew Germany at home. And again, it's kind of like, okay, I could see how that could happen. You know, they're tough at home. They beat England 4-0 in England. That is by far for me the biggest shock result of this entire window. I don't think anything for me even comes close in terms of just score line, location, teams. And they are a good team. I don't know if they're that good. I don't know if they're beating Germany, England, and Italy in a group that good, or if it's just something's wrong with the England team. And I think that's very possible. Hungary, it's and not to take anything away from Hungary. They're a solid team. Like I said, they're good at home. And you know, that's why they're on my list, but I definitely did not expect them to top this group at this point.
Yep.
And then also just as a result, you know, I'm not sure if we mentioned this before, but with the pots, you know, in the Nations League dictating the pots, like Hungary's got, like 95% chance, I think I mentioned, of being in the top pot for the Euro draw. And so, you know, we'll see, you know, they're probably like crossing their fingers that they get drawn with England again.
Right.
but you know, that they should be in a great position to qualify directly for Euro.
Yeah.
Well, they're one of the teams that took this Nations League seriously, and they're reaping the benefits of it.
Just insane that scoreline away to England. It's just insane. They absolutely whopped them.
Yep.
Crazy.
Yep. And I think there are a lot of our followers out there that were quite content with that scoreline.
Yeah.
So that was my first team. I had two other teams in UEFA that I just wanted to touch upon quickly in terms of my best performances. So in League B, Israel, I think is one that stuck out to me. They're in a group with Iceland and Albania, and with Russia being kicked out of the tournament. Basically, one of those three teams, Israel, Iceland, and Albania, mathematically has to get promoted to League A. And then again, for the, you know, Euro draw is going to end up in pot two. And so I think for all three of these teams, Israel, Iceland, Albania, there's a lot at stake. I think there is a clear path to see, like, okay, we can get promoted, we can qualify for Euro. And we actually liked Albania. Our rankings liked Albania, and they're third of the three. Israel, they're not done yet, but Israel performed very well. They won a match, they drew two. They got a tough road point at Iceland. They beat Albania in Albania. And I think that was really the turning point, that specific match in beating Albania in Albania, that really gave them the edge. And so at this point, you know, they're looking really strong. We give them like a 75% chance to win that group and get promoted. So they're a team that we just wanted to shout out as a team that, you know, I think they've always kind of been on the brink of doing better. And, you know, they've had a lot of hot starts and seem to fall short. And, you know, they're not through it yet. We'll see if they're able to kind of finish it out here. But they're a team for me that stuck out. And then the third team that I wanted to highlight also was in League C, and that is Kazakhstan. And I think for us coming into the tournament, I'm not going to say they were in the exact same boat as Hungary as, we definitely think they're going to finish last type thing, but Slovakia was the clear favorite in this group.
Yep.
Belarus is tough. They're not playing at home though. So I think, you know, they've been a little bit disadvantaged by that. But Kazakhstan's been unbelievable. They have 10 points from four matches,
yeah,
which is just, you know, crazy. They came out and beat Azerbaijan at home. They won in Slovakia. And I think that was kind of the turning point.
That's a big result, yeah,
for them to, you know, win in Slovakia against a team that probably was favored to win the group.
Right.
Yeah. So they're in a great spot. They have 10 points through four matches. Slovakia is in second on six. So just one more win will clinch promotion for them.
Yep.
So they have to be feeling really good about where they're at. Highly likely to get into League B. And again, you know, they'll be in pot four for the Euro draw. And by winning their group, they're also mathematically guaranteed a spot in the playoffs for Euro as well. So they're, you know, there's a lot at stake here. And I think, you know, they have to be feeling good about their chances to reach Euro, which is awesome.
Yeah, that is awesome. They are definitely one that caught my eye with some of their performances. I was just watching some of the highlights of their games, and they have some ballers, and that's pretty cool, I think.
it is there, and you know, they're a team again that I think within UEFA they haven't been there. They're not a team like an Israel that I look at or an Albania that's been closer, about, you know, on the brink. They've been pretty far down in terms of where they've been in UEFA. You know, if you're thinking from like a pot perspective, which that's all I think about, you know, to me, that's like, oh, they're pot five, you know, maybe pot four, maybe. They look really good. And I think it's good to see them, you know, really start to make that move. I'm curious to see, you know, how they finish it off. Mm-hmm. So those were the UEFA teams that caught my eye in this window. And the other two I had were just in CONCACAF. I think you mentioned Nicaragua, that they've looked really good. We talked about them a little bit already, so I won't spend too much time on them, but they topped the group ahead of Trinidad and Tobago. So still work to be done there, but if they do win their group, you'll see Nicaragua at the Gold Cup, which is awesome. And then just the last team in CONCACAF I wanted to mention is Bonaire. They were one that I just kept looking at my, you know, computer rankings in front of me, and like, this can't be right. Like every time I took a look and we ran through the simulations, is like Bonaire, 90%, 95%. Like, can they really be favored that much over these other teams? And they've delivered. And I think they've done a great job. They kind of came out of nowhere. Also, they're not a team you typically think about in terms of CONCACAF. And, you know, some of these teams that have performed, you know, well recently, a St. Kitts and Nevis, you know, but Bonaire's been really good. And they look highly likely to make the Gold Cup playoffs. So, it would be really cool to see them at the Gold Cup.
Yeah, that would be really cool. Yeah, that would be. I love it. I love it.
So those were the hot teams of the window. Let's go back to you. And who did you not like this window?
All right. So for my knots, the first team that I had and the first team to go down on the sheet is Mexico.
Okay.
it has nothing to do with the rivalry. It has everything to do with performances. I mean, they got lambasted by Uruguay. I mean, it was, honestly, they didn't even look competitive.
Yeah.
Uruguay head and shoulders above. And that has to be alarming somewhat. I mean, it is Uruguay, but at the same time, you know, that's a team with under new leadership and still trying to find themselves a little bit. You know, definitely quality players, but Mexico, I just don't know where this team is going.
Yeah.
And I'm not confident in them. And that's the thing.
I feel the same way. And it's even at the World Cup, I'm just thinking, I'm concerned about what they're actually going to do at the World Cup.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they could be in trouble. So Mexico was the first team, for me. They lost to Uruguay. And then I think, they also lost to Ecuador. If I'm not mistaken,
they did okay. And I mean, they beat Suriname and drew Jamaica.
Correct. So
they kind of stabilized it and, you know, did what they needed to do to probably get to the Gold Cup. But
yeah, even, not, even, even the Jamaica game was a bit surprising, you know, their performance that they put in, because Jamaica looked really good for long stretches of that game. And they totally outplayed Mexico.
Yeah.
And so for me, you know, again, those alarm bells kind of going off a little bit. So it's crazy. Okay. Yeah. So Mexico team number two, we've already talked about, that's Egypt. I know you're not quite, you know, panicking or anything, which is fine.
Still disappointed.
Yeah. But for me, yeah, it was, you know, it's that disappointment. They didn't have Salah. Maybe that played a factor, but I'm not 100% sure. You know, they just didn't look good. They're extremely defensive, really just kind of boring. So thumbs down this window for me, for Egypt. The third team that I have is Saudi Arabia, actually. So they had two friendlies against South American teams. They played Venezuela and they played Colombia, and they lost each game by a score of 1-0. But again, very similar to Mexico for me, you know, they looked good in qualifying, but they've kind of cooled off a little bit. And I was high on them for a while there. And I'm just wondering now if I had the blinders on, and, you know, they were made to look good because they were facing, you know, Asian competition maybe. And so I'm, they've kind of cooled off, and I'm bummed about that. You know, I really like Irv Renard as a coach. I think he's a really good coach. I think he's doing the best he can with what he's got. There's not any or hardly any Saudi Arabian players that play outside of their domestic league. There's a lot of money in their domestic league that keeps a lot of players home. That means that these players are not playing day in and day out and training with, you know, other world-class players. And I think that's a detriment to them.
Yeah. looking at just where we have the six Asian teams at the World Cup ranked, we actually have Saudi Arabia last of the six.
Yeah.
Which again, I'm just kind of like, it's just hitting me that I know you mentioned it before, but there are four South American teams and six Asian teams at the World Cup.
Yeah.
I think that is not a good balance.
Nope. Team number four for me, is Slovakia. So we were just kind of talking about them.
Yeah.
And, they should be, quote unquote, should be, you know, taking this group. And I think that they'll be disappointed with the window that they had. You know, they're not necessarily out of it. I guess, you know, anything could happen, but at this point in time, they face an uphill battle, honestly. And so I think they have to come away a little disappointed with that. You know, to lose on home soil, that's a little bit surprising.
They've struggled.
Yeah, they have.
They lost twice to Kazakhstan. They recently lost to Norway. They lost to Russia. They lost to Croatia. Yep. They lost to Spain, Sweden. I'm shocked. I didn't realize how far down they've gone, but they're number 53 in our rankings.
Yep.
And that's to have Slovakia outside of the top 50. I did not think they were performing that poorly, but I mean, that just goes to show, like, it's not an isolated incident just from this window.
Right. Yep. They've kind of been dropping for a while, as you just alluded to. Yeah. Yeah. And I guess this is really what, for me, when my eyes kind of open and be like, okay, and they're not quite where they were before, you know, even though they've kind of been dropping for a while. And then, number five, England. So where do I go with this? Because I think there's a lot of different viewpoints, right? So I don't think that these results are. I don't think you can boo Southgate, honestly. Mm-hmm. I think he's done really, really great things with England, right? Like it was the final, right? They were in the final of the Euros, right? I mean. Yeah. I mean, that's fantastic. And again, I just wonder, you know, was there some squad rotation there?
Yeah.
You know, So regardless, you know, I'm kind of giving them a thumbs down for this window, you know, because they probably should have beaten Hungary at home. And instead they just got a total whooping.
But
it's, you know, going into the World Cup, what does this do for the team and their confidence levels?
Yeah. And maybe the answer is absolutely nothing.
Maybe it is.
It's just the UEFA Nations League.
Exactly.
I think the tough part is that you just have a team like England that it's like these guys are at the complete end of the season, which that's just, you know, we'll talk about in a future podcast. But I'm very curious to see the different timing of the World Cup because it's right in the middle of the season.
Right.
It's not at the end of the season. And so in theory, you should have guys that are in form and are not, you know,
exhausted,
tired at the end of their long season, everything.
Right.
So I don't know. England was at the top of my list for most disappointing teams, but it's just hard because you don't know how much they just actually care.
Right. Exactly. And that certainly could have played a role in it for sure. I stuck them on there. Some other honorable
deserved.
Yeah. So some other honorable mentions for the knots. I put Guatemala on there.
Yeah.
They're not necessarily out of it, but, I expected more.
Yeah.
So that's why they're there. France, we kind of already talked about that a little bit. Sweden. I'm very surprised. Very surprised by Sweden right now.
They're out. They can't even get promoted at this point.
Right. Yeah. Which is, I thought for sure they would at least be a contender and they're already out of it. So not sure what's going on there, but that was alarming. And then the last one I had was Congo. So,
And just another quick note on Sweden as well. I keep bringing up the exact same topic about the pots and everything, but, you look at Sweden and they're a team that could be in trouble. I've got like a 98% chance of being in pot three for the draw for Euro. You know, you got England and France probably in pot two. And so if they don't, you know, qualify directly, which I think coming from pot three, the expectation is they don't qualify directly. Mm-hmm. Then at best you're in a 4-game playoff where you have to be the winner of that four teams. And you're going against League B teams that you're just played and don't look as strong as. So
yeah,
if I'm, you know, a Sweden fan, I am definitely concerned about, the ability to qualify for Euro. I think that's a real concern at this point.
Yep. Agreed. Okay. So what about you?
England. I do have some other teams. France was terribly disappointing. I think we talked about them a little bit as well. Their bottom of their group, as are England. France doesn't really have an excuse. I mean, England, sure, you can say, okay, they're with Germany and Italy. Like, I've expressed my love for Denmark over and over, but France is not better than Croatia or Austria. France is better. Croatia, excuse me. Well, maybe they're not better according to the table, but right. I think, you know, all things considered, if you put France side by side against Croatia and Austria, I think almost everyone is taking France.
Yep.
Again, I don't know if they just don't care what the situation is, but they're going to be in pot two, most likely for the Euro draw. They can easily be relegated. They're 2 points behind Austria. They're 5 behind Croatia. They can't win the group. They're just trying to fight off the relegation. It's like, what is UEFA going to do? Are they going to let France get relegated to League B? Like, that would be interesting.
Yeah.
They didn't let Germany get relegated to League B. I don't know if they'll just throw more teams into League A next time. I think they would actually allow it. But they've been disappointing, and I get it's tough because you look at these matches and it's a 6-match, group stage. four of the matches you're playing over a period of a week, pretty much.
Yeah.
And it's just such a short time frame and a small sample size at the conclusion of the season. I think the timing of it is not great. I think the timing before, when it was, you know, September, October, November, two matches in each month, that to me makes much more sense. And the games are spread out more and you have players that are, you know, more informed. I think that that's a better situation. So I was really disappointed with France. And then just a couple teams. So Congo DR, we mentioned already. Two teams just in CONCACAF that I wanted to point out that I just felt were a little disappointing. Curaçao was one that, you know, I was hopeful that they'd be able to do a little bit more, especially with Honduras in the group, who has been struggling. They had a really, really poor performance in World Cup qualifying. I expected a little more from Curaçao. You know, they kind of traded blows. They lost at home to Honduras and then beat Honduras on the road. And then it, you know, kind of comes down to the final two with Canada. They got destroyed 4-0 against Canada. So it seems like they're probably going to be relegated. But I think they still could, you know, make the Gold Cup through the playoff route. I think they're good enough to do that. But I am a little disappointed that they, it looks like they're going to finish last in their group. And then just the last team, you know, we haven't really talked about in CONCACAF, but just another one that stuck out to me was St. Vincent and the Grenadines. You know, they're, you know, a little bit of a lesser known team in CONCACAF, but they're always a team that seems to be, you know, kind of a surprise team. They always seem to kind of sneak in there and, you know, be competitive. And in their group with Nicaragua, Trinidad and Tobago and the Bahamas, they really have shown nothing at all. You know, 1 point from four matches, and it looks like they're probably going to be relegated also. So they're a team that I would have liked to see a little more from. I think, you know, in that group C, I certainly didn't expect Nicaragua to be, you know, head and shoulders above them. So
yeah.
Another team just in CONCACAF that was a little disappointing for me.
Nice. Love it.
All right. So I think that concludes our June recap. Anything else that we haven't covered? I think we've covered the globe end to end.
I think you're right. I think you're right for the most part. Yeah. No, nothing really. I guess final thought for me is we only have one more international break before the World Cup.
That's unbelievable.
So that's in September. You and I are we've got some stuff maybe that we're trying to plan out in terms of World Cup. So look for that. That'll be fun. We've got some interviews coming up as well. Looking forward to that. So yeah, if you're still here, I don't know what we're doing for time. It's gotta be going on 2 hours.
Yeah.
Then thanks for listening to the whole show. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. And so, yeah, we'll, you know, give you our socials again, as we always do at the conclusion. You can follow myself at @we_global on Twitter. Follow Joe at 12th Yank and follow our pod, Window INTL pod, all on Twitter. You know, we're continuously posting content there, but as Joe said, you know, as we head towards the summer and then with just one international break, we're definitely going to start shifting more towards, you know, World Cup focus and really, you know, delving into what's going to happen in the groups and the teams and getting you all familiar with the players and trying to, you know, prepare you for the World Cup. So
yeah,
looking forward to it over the next few months here.
Yep. And Brandon's going to be there.
I am going to be there. My official first match is now known. It's Japan versus Costa Rica. That will be the first one. So I will see you there.
All right. That's awesome. Yeah. I love it.
So, yeah, it was interesting. It could have been New Zealand, but it was not meant to be.
Japan, right. New Zealand, Battle of the Pacific. There you go.
I know. And it did not happen.
Didn't happen. Yeah.
I'll be really disappointed if Costa Rica scores in the third minute and then just packs it in for the next 87.
Yeah, I agree. That should not happen. We've already discussed that. But you know, come to think of it, isn't isn't Japan, Costa Rica also a battle of the Pacific? Costa Rica backs on the Pacific, right?
It does. Yeah. That is true. Costa Rica touches both the Pacific and the Atlantic.
Yeah. All right. There's your geographic fact for the
indeed. Indeed. All right. Well, thanks for listening, everyone. We really appreciate it. As Joe said, you know, I think we're going on 2 hours here. So thanks for sticking it out with us, and we will see you next time on another episode of The Window. Bye.